For Thursday, January 10th, 2019, this is another episode of Madison's favorite radio science program, Perpetual Notion Machine. I am just one of your three hosts tonight, Will Cushman. I'm joined in the studio by Kelly Schwartz.
That's me.
And Dennis Schaefer.
That's me.
And we have the wonderful engineer, Kevin Lauderyoung, engineering for us. Thank you so much, as always. So tonight, we are going to talk a little bit about, actually, a lot of bit, the whole episode about the previous year, 2018. Mm-hmm.
I thank God it's over.
We're a little bit over a week into 2019, but I think there's still plenty to say about 2018. So I'm going to let Kelly take off.
Sure. So in the process of continuity, things happen. You know, we like to segregate time. It's a convenient unit of metric as sapiens. This is what we do. But, you know, I guess to a scientist, you sort of measure time based on productivity. So that's kind of how I'm choosing to think about this. You know, 2018 for a lot of people may have been very problematic. And I'm sure that more than some of us are happy to leave it in the past and to get a fresh start. So enjoy your fresh start. What we're going to hopefully do today is kind of catch you up on maybe the big picture, some of the big pictures. I mean, there's no way to do it in half an hour for sure. But I picked out some things that I thought were interesting to discuss with my fellow PNMers. And we'll discuss a little bit about the science that you might have heard about or might not have heard about in 2018. We are also going to talk a little bit about our science New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
So why don't we do that first? So does anybody have any specific science-based resolutions that they'd like to talk about?
Dennis, do you want to go? Or
I usually don't have any resolutions. Mm-hmm. But there are a few things related to climate change. Mm-hmm. And I brought this up on a few of our guests that we've had on. Heather and Nan did some, they've been doing excellent shows about
mm-hmm. We'll talk about
energy. Madison is going to go eventually to 100% alternative energy. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I had, and this is way out there, way out there. Madison has a sister city in Europe called Freiburg.
Okay.
Germany. Anyone familiar with Freiburg?
I've heard of it.
I've been through it once, way back when in the 80s, 1980s, way before your time. And they
was around in the 80s.
They have a, what they ended up doing, they have a sort of like a donut hole that they made completely carbon free. Mm-hmm. Mostly because no carbon emission mm-hmm. from cars.
Sure.
What I'd like to see, this is not a resolution, but a wish, mm-hmm. is that I wish Madison would do that.
Expanding the donut hole.
Yes, and I even
2019.
Up, here's the thing is mm-hmm. it's huge. Is they use we got a belt line that goes around, mm-hmm. and then we got the interstate on the east side, and the north side is sort of crap.
Oh, but, sorry, Northsiders.
That would
we
be,
can't help
that
you.
Would, yeah, that would be the that would be the thing. And the problem is that it expands beyond the state capital area, the mm-hmm. isthmus, way beyond. Could we be able to, with residential houses and stuff, have everybody go without having basically gas cars, just electric cars or anything like that? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's possible.
Sorry, poor people. We have no use for you anymore. Goodbye. We'll see you in Fitchburg.
Yeah. The thing that I like about it is that everything is electric, so that all the trucks, there'll be no trucks within the inner mm-hmm. circle.
Right.
So all the trucks have to deposit all their cargo out on the fringes, and then it has to be then towed.
Yeah, towed exactly. Yeah, pretty much.
But that it's not a resolution, but that's sort of a wish I have.
For 2019.
2019, expanding the donut hole.
So this is very ambitious and, interesting. So my science-related, sorry, was that the end of? Yes.
Yeah, that's the end.
We'll chip in.
I like it.
But that's the thing is that, to me, climate change is the biggest news story, I think.
Yeah.
And to be able to, well, mitigation is getting to be out of the realm, and adaptability is in. To be able to try to mitigate, we have to go cold turkey, basically. That means stopping everything, coal, gas, everything, cold turkey from, say, tomorrow.
What's your opinion on nuclear power?
Nuclear is okay.
Nuclear is okay.
But the only thing about nuclear is that it's completely green because of the waste material.
There's not as much waste, I've heard, as people seem to think, that there's actually a lot of benefits. Check out my show from last year. We'll talk more about that in a little bit.
In fact, I will too.
Yeah.
I love nuclear. But my New Year's resolutions that are science related, the first one is to brush up on my statistics knowledge.
Oh, it's so critical.
Yes,
yeah.
It's so critical, and I'm going to be using it a lot more in my daily life and work life soon. And part of that is I want to relearn how to use R, at least like competently.
R, of course, is a programming language often used for statistics and sabermetrics. Does sabermetrics expand beyond baseball, or is that a specific term for baseball stats?
I don't know. So it very likely could be just baseball, because I would have no idea if it was a baseball thing. But yeah, so I want to...
There's a lot of baseball stats, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
More than you think.
My other science-related New Year's resolution is to try to use evidence in my arguments. Real evidence that's like...
You mean anecdotes.
Yeah.
You mean anecdotes.
Yeah. Or just like not be like, oh yeah, I think that this is this way because I just, I think I read something about that one time. Yeah. And actually like know what I'm talking about when I make claims.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is going to be a hard one because I'm not very good at that, especially when I'm like having a conversation with my boyfriend. So
you'll get used to it though. I mean, eventually it's a habit that you need to follow. So 30 days, don't say anything without having evidence to support your claim.
Right. And I don't have any excuses with a phone in my pocket.
Sure.
Yeah.
Actually, I was in an where was I? I was back home for the holidays, and I was at the local bar that we all go to when you go back to your hometown. And I was sitting next to somebody.
Where's home?
I'm from Saginaw, Michigan.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And we were having a discussion about something, and the person I was sitting next to like pulls out their phone, is like, well, let's figure this out. And I was like, could we just have an argument in a bar, because I miss this so much. And we were both like, you know what? Yeah. So. I would say that, you know, like sometimes it's fun to just speculate.
Oh, totally.
But not to engorge yourself too much on that sweet speculation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was like, I think I'm making a habit of this.
Yeah.
I'm gorging on it a little bit too much. But yeah. What are yours? Your resolutions?
I have a few of them. None of them are as I think well thought out as yours are though. I want to continue foraging. So every year I feel like I learn some new plants. It's a slow process, you know. Even if you only learn a handful of new plants every year, that still contributes a lot to the web of knowledge. So I hope to keep sharing that with people and learning more recipes and hopefully sharing that with you folks. I'm also similarly at the Arboretum hoping to work with a group of LGBT youth. I identify as queer non-binary, if anybody cares, doesn't matter. But I do want to help promote this idea of nature as a safe space. If you're somebody who doesn't look like an outdoorsy person, you know, like especially if you've grown up in the city, you know, like you've grown up on concrete your whole life and you feel like, I want to be able to spend time outdoors. I just don't know what to do out there or what it means. My goal is specifically to work with like a more at-risk group of people. And it's something that the Arboretum has kind of started. So if you are an LGBTQ youth and you are interested in discussing and teaching me more about how you would see nature as a safe space, I'm definitely interested to talk to you, and stay tuned for events that we might have coming up to the tune of that. Because there it's a whole thing. We could talk a whole show about that.
Yeah. I love that. That's, what are you talking about? That is like the most thoughtful New Year's resolution.
I mean, it's not a resolution. It's a thing. It's a thing that's on the docket. It's not really like, it's already in plans.
I love it.
Professionally, this is a year of big change for me. So I want to try to figure out how I can take my experiences in academia to help change one thing for the better. And my goal is to, I don't know what it is going to be yet, but I want to start a project before I move out of Madison. I don't want to move out of Madison. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. But I want to leave something that's self-perpetuating that's beneficial to people. So I guess that's kind of my goal, is to put something in motion perpetually.
Ooh,
wrap around. and then at the
Do
bench.
Do you have any ideas?
You're
still working on it.
Still working on it. I think that work with the Arboretum has something to do with
right.
that. One thing that we had kind of, and stay for you listeners, in a few weeks, January 31st, I'll be interviewing a couple members of the Arboretum. We have a team leader training coming up starting in March. So if you've been to our work parties and it's something that you enjoy doing, you enjoy learning about citizen science participating in, again, the community development, it touches so many things, community development, restoration ecology.
Right.
Definitely tune in on the 31st and we'll teach you all about that. But one thing that me and the volunteer director, Marion Ferrier, have been talking about is the fact that I work at a university, right?
Mm-hmm.
We live in the state of Wisconsin, which has this Wisconsin idea, which means we sort of use our academic institutions to provide for our own. But you know what we're not doing is not doing everything we can do to really help practitioners of restoration, like land managers, for example, land managers of Dane County, the land managers of the Arboretum.
Right.
We have this wonderful research institution, and yet practical problems that could be solved by doing kind of guided research and collaborations between these two entities. Again, the Arboretum is a holding of the university itself, but there's just not a direct line of communication between them, wherein the researchers are directly working with the practitioners of restoration. So right. if I could set one thing into motion, it would definitely be to improve that aspect of communication, wherein you could have people in crop and soil sciences doing cover crops. I mean, the Arboretum is, I'm sorry, this turned into a whole thing about the Arboretum, but
No,
it's a proving ground. I mean, it's one of the birthplace
Absolutely.
Of ecological
Absolutely.
Restoration. So I think that we as researchers should be giving back
Definitely.
To what has brought, you know, so much acclaim to the university and to Madison.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I guess like a more concrete goal, for that, but yeah, I want to be more compassionate when communicating science for everyone's benefit. And I guess that kind of fits into that as well. Kevin, did you have any science resolutions to put you on the spot?
You mean besides getting my research to work?
Well, I mean, that's work, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do. I've got, so I just finished up classes in my PhD,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really excited to start writing more. So I'm actually, you mentioned cover crops. I'm writing a policy memo on no-till farming in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Just a big cover crop related issue.
Mm-hmm.
So more policy memos, more op-eds, more content for this show, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Things of that nature.
And you of course volunteer with the Catalysts for Science Policy. I forget what the acronym
That's right.
That's
yeah. Catalysts for Science Policy. It's CASP.
Yeah.
That's right. So so most of my policy memo forays are through them. They are my conduit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, this foraging endeavor you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
I'm highly intrigued. And I would be very interested in joining you sometime, because I am also want to forage. But
yes,
because I'm from California, I don't know any of the
native yum yums.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many yum yums out there.
Yeah.
As soon as the snow melts.
So I think you just put that on my list.
Oh, good. Yeah. I don't have any insurance waivers for anybody to sign. But, you know, generally, if you're interested, let me know. I eat a lot of stuff off the ground.
Yeah.
And I think people would enjoy it more if they tried it. So yeah, we'll keep that going, and we'll talk more about that. Again, if you ever have any follow-ups for the stories that we do here, if you have any questions for us PNMers to investigate, give us a call at 608-256-2001, or you can email us at our email, which is
science on WORT at gmail.com.
Yes. So definitely get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. And that's another resolution I guess we could make, is to be more part of the community and to be more communicative with you, our dear listeners, in this new year.
Yes.
All right. So on with the show. So what I would like to talk a little bit about is a site called altmetric.com. Altmetric is a really interesting website. It's a data science company whose mission is to track and analyze online activity around scholarly literature. They collate what people are saying about published research outputs in sources such as the mainstream media, policy documents, social networks, blogs, and other scholarly and non-scholarly forums. In doing so, provide a more robust picture of the influence and reach of scholarly work, working with some of the biggest publishers, funders, and institutions around the world to deliver the data. And they have databases from not just last year, but I don't know how long it goes back. But if you're interested in how primary literature affects the media broadly, this is a great site to check out. There's a lot to see. So they put out their list of 2018's top 100. So this is in the last year, Altmetric tracked 25 million mentions of 2.8 million research outputs, and the page highlights the top 100 most mentioned scholarly articles published in the past year. So I thought this was really interesting and sort of worth sharing. So not only science that is relevant published in the last year, but what people have been interested in communicating in the last year.
Yeah.
So number one, mortality in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. In the face of inadequate government data on mortality rates following one of the decade's biggest catastrophes, researchers released this new approach to determining the number of deaths caused by natural disasters. This was published July 2018 in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a very, very well-respected, good journal. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting. It's a political issue, but I hadn't thought of it so much as a science research. But, you know, like that, certainly it is. It's important to develop metrics for tracking these kinds of things and for assessing damage, because through data, again, learning stats, right? The right. Value of numbers, the numbers don't lie. The interpretations can. They can be skewed, which is why it's important to talk about these models and, you know, how we calculate these kinds of things and right. How things can be improved. So
that was the number one story?
That was the number one story.
Okay. So this was research being done to collect data across not just the Puerto Rico one, right? Or is it just the Puerto Rico one, but over across maybe just, is it all natural disasters or just hurricanes or?
It was just Hurricane Maria in 2017. So I have the paper right here, actually. So the background, the abstract.
That was what was being
referenced
in other studies then.
Yes, in other studies, not just other studies, but other publications. So in news stories and blog posts, it was cited in a policy document. It was very highly tweeted. There were...
Yes, I was wondering of social media. Were there a lot of hits on Facebook and things with other people? Just people in general?
Yeah.
And they kept track of that?
Yep, this is the number one most interacted with. And again, this is a primary piece of literature. This is data done. This isn't speculation. This isn't opinion. These are actual numbers collected and worked up as scientists do. So this is something that, I mean, I would say that you could really get behind.
Well, that's funny because, you know, again, climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I mean, that's been around for so long, and yet people didn't believe it, and there was very little interest in it for like 30 years.
Mm.
This is an interesting thing, you know, that somebody suddenly thinks that maybe it's a good idea that we should, you know, keep track statistically of, you know, what the interest is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
what
people are thinking.
Right, because there's... It's an interesting cycle. Psychologically, it's very interesting to be a generator of primary knowledge, of creating new knowledge that is new in the world and gathering numbers and analyzing them. It's a very important job, and it's something that scientists don't take lightly. You need to be aware of a lot of mental fallacies and things like that in order to really, truly understand what what these tests are showing us. So I think that for a lot of scientists, it's very difficult to understand how other people receive information because, again, we are, you know, so privileged to have access to primary literature, you know, where for me, it was no problem to print out this article from the New England Journal of Medicine, whereas I think that it's behind a paywall. Like, I don't think that most people... Actually, this one is free. It does say on Altmetric that this one is free.
Okay.
But I don't think
a lot are.
But a lot of them are. Yeah, exactly. So we, which is why, again, it's important for us to be better communicators about this information and interpretation. I mean, not like you should necessarily trust me and everything that I say, but I can point you to some primary literature. And I think that that's really important. So it's super interesting to see how people at large interact with primary literature and how that contributes to forming beliefs about climate change or about, again, there's two different sides of the story to Hurricane Maria and the death count. I mean, according to this, the official death count is 64, but the article goes into a lot more and they tell you the formulas they use. They've got bar graphs. I mean, it's thick.
You know, there's a line, too, in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is online
that,
you know, What do you believe? You
right.
Know? What's real? What's not real? What's true? What's not true?
Yeah, and a really excellent scientific communicator at my alma mater, University of Michigan, Betsy Foxman. In a conversation, we were talking about, you know, like, why don't people believe climate change? Why don't people believe about antibiotics?
Exactly.
And
right.
She kind of just smiled and looked into the
Absolutely.
Middle distance, and said, you know, there's a big difference between belief and understanding. And that's been so important for me. So I hope that clarifies some things for maybe some of you people out there, too. You know, there's a big difference between belief and understanding. And if you can't interpret these bar graphs or you don't have access to it or you don't have a good, reliable source to help you interpret this primary information. I mean, what is reality? What is truth? I mean, here we are.
That's right.
And it's our job collectively to help mollify that or ameliorate the causes of that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So that was number one. You guys want another one?
Yeah.
Y'all? All right. So number two, Altmetric's top articles, The Spread of True and False News Online. And this was published in Science Magazine, March 2018. I know that Science sounds like the most stereotypical name for a publication, but it's one of the top three most well-respected publications for science.
That is
science
definitely
in broad.
One I'd like to go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
And this one is behind a paywall. Which is unfortunate. It's pretty well written. I mean, again, they do a lot of workup.
So what's the premise there? It's like tracking the spread of news on the internet, or like, I'm not sure. Is it like modeling or tracking?
So according to Altmetric, this surprising article by MIT researchers found that rumors spread much faster and further on Twitter than truth.
Okay.
Or do they? So the abstract, summarily says, we investigated differential diffusion. Come on, talk about being obtuse. We investigated the differential diffusion of all the verified true and false news stories distributed by Twitter from 2006 to 2017. So it's crossed the years as the platforms changed. Data comprises approximately 126,000 stories tweeted by more than 3 million people, more than 4.5 million times. We classified news as true or false using information from six independent fact-checking organizations that exhibited 95% to 98% agreement on the classification. So they made sure that true was generally agreed to be true.
Right.
Falsehood diffused significantly farther, deeper, and more broadly than the truth in all categories of information, and the effects were more broad or more pronounced for false political news than for false news about terrorism, natural disasters, science, urban legends, or financial information. We found that false news was more novel than true news. I mean, the truth is boring, man.
Yeah.
Which suggests that people were more likely to share novel information. Whereas false stories inspired fear, disgust, and surprise in replies, true stories inspired anticipation, sadness, joy, and trust. Contrary to conventional wisdom, robots accelerated the spread of true and false news at the same time. So not all false news, it's just more news moving faster, implying that false news spreads more than the truth because humans, not robots, are more likely to spread it.
All right.
So if you can get your hands on this, this was, again, 2018. This is the 9th of March, 2018. The authors are, I'm gonna butcher this name, Vashogi, Roy, and Aral, and they are researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. So if that's of interest to you, go check that out.
Yeah, that is interesting and depressing.
Yeah.
But
all right, I'll do one more of these real quick and then maybe some predictions for the new year. Okay, so the third, and this is the last one of these I'll read. Definitely go check out Altmetric if you're interested in looking at some more of these. Alcohol use and burden for 195 countries, territories from 1990 to 2016, a systematic analysis for the Global Burden of Disease Study 2016. Man, you would get kicked out of grad school if you tried to publish something with a title like that.
Yeah, that's a monster.
That is challenging. But so this is the alcohol study that that seemed to indicate, according to the results, that any amount of alcohol is unsafe for ingestion. And it is a big study. I haven't read it. I haven't looked at their values. I'm assuming that it's probably fairly true, but I doubt that it goes into the workup of everything that one could consider. So it's probably not without merit. But yeah, it was a very highly cited study. This was published August 2018 in The Lancet, another very well-respected medical journal.
They've made their mistakes at times too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you referring to the debate about autism? Was that a Lancet or was that New England Journal? I think it was Lancet.
I think it was Lancet.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, but the big publishers are the ones that get the stinker story. Science published the arsenic backbone of DNA. Yeah. You know, I mean, and that got really put through the ringer too.
Right.
You know, high impact is high impact, I guess. Right. So, cool. So those were three of the top most cited studies of 2018.
And where can people find those again online?
This is, I'm just reading from a website because I'm a lazy host. This is www.altmetric.com. That's altmetric.com. And I can post that in the show notes when we post this on the blog. So you can check for that. So does anybody have any predictions about what we're going to see in the next year? I know we got some good telescope projects coming up. We might observe some cool galaxy black hole busyness.
Dennis, maybe do you want to go first? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't really have a prediction, but my brother was telling me over the holidays that he saw a video that I don't know, I can't remember if it was like GE or one of those other like big appliance manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Had developed like a robotic laundry folding machine that could like fold your laundry super well,
mm-hmm.
and that it would eventually, their goal was like sometime very soon to have it become a part of your household, like a washer, dryer, and then
a
like
folder.
You'd have a folder. That'd so I looked it up and I couldn't find anything other than this like very, very fake looking YouTube video mm-hmm. that was supposed to be at CES last year. Which is, I think CES is happening again right now, the like technology conference.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it's real.
But robotics.
Yeah.
Robotics on the come up in 2019.
It sounds really cool. If anyone knows if it's real, let us know. What about you? What's your prediction?
Real quick, I'm concerned about protection of genetic information, access to genetic databases. Last year, the Golden State Killer was identified by GED base.
That's right.
So with so many people doing 23andMe, I think that that's great, but it also exposes us to a lot of complications in terms of how we protect this data, how it's used, how it's shared between organizations. And that was one of the things that Dennis wanted to talk about. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Discover Magazine. Issue.
Well, that's unfortunately all the time that we have for today.
Yeah. We want to thank everyone who listened tonight. And thank you so much to Kelly for really doing a lot of prep work for tonight. And thank you to Dennis for
joining.
Thanks. This is the Perpetual Notion Machine.